You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert. And at this moment, a little over 2,000 of the people risking their lives to fight wildfires in California are earning a total of $1 per hour. That is because they are inmates from California's sprawling prison system. And when you are in the system, there is no minimum wage. Now, there's this kind of debate over how to look at these firefighters. On the one hand, those wages are pretty naked exploitation. On the other, a lot of prisoners jump at the chance to do it, and frankly, we would be pretty screwed as a state without their work. Anyway, instead of rehashing that debate, we thought this would be a good time to talk to someone who has actually fought fires while doing time. Amika Mota worked at Cal Fire Station 5 in Madero while she was incarcerated at Chowchilla. Now she is reentry director at the Young Women's Freedom Center here in the Bay Area. Thank you so much for coming in.
And thank you for having me.
So can we just like start with your story? How did you start working at a fire station?
Yeah, so I started, I was incarcerated on a 10-year sentence in 2008. And I started my time at a prison down south, the CIW. Ended up transferring to CCWF, Chowchilla, and was... I had dreams of making it to the firehouse, which is kind of a buzz I'd heard about since I'd been in prison. But I wasn't able to get my points low enough to get to the firehouse at that point. So I was on a wait list to get into the firehouse for about 3 years.
Explain what it means to get your points low.
There's like a point system when you come into prison. So based on what your crime is, how old you were at the time of arrest, what your behavior in prison has been like, if you have high points, you are not eligible for certain types of programs. My points were too high to make it to the firehouse. I actually never thought they'd get low enough to make it, but we had this a law changed in 2011 that changed the point schedule inside prisons, and it made it so I fell just into this level where I was able to make it to the firehouse.
Why was the firehouse the thing that everybody wanted to do?
Well, so when I started at CIW, it was actually fire camp. So fire camps at CIW are different than the firehouse at Chowchilla. So I'll just kind of give you the differences on those.
Sure.
The fire camps that we are hearing about right now, that's the majority of what's made up of the inmate firefighters that are out on the front lines now. And those fire camps are, people are trained up at the prisons and then they're dispatched to wildland firefighting camps where they stay, live, and train as firefighters. CCWF Chowchilla has a different type of program and they have an institutional firehouse. There's only 10 firefighters there, and we fight fires, anything that happens with inside of the prison. So fire alarms that go off, any fires that happen in the institution we deal with. And then what was unique about us is we had an agreement with Madera County that we would dispatch to any Madera County calls within a 30-mile radius of the prison. So what was a little bit different about us was that we fought structure fires, vehicle fires. We responded to medical aids in people's homes, car accidents, and we also fought wildland firefighting. You know, we would do wildland fires if they were happening, but we also were responding to people's homes. So that was pretty unique. I also have to clarify, because your opening statement was about how we earn $1 an hour. That's not always true. 53 cents an hour was the most I ever made as a firefighter.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was the most I could earn there. And so when I hear the dollar an hour and how that wage is awful, I'm like, we didn't even earn that. On the fire camps, people earn $1 an hour when they're dispatched on a fire, but when they're not dispatched and they're in their fire camp training, you're earning next to nothing. So 8 cents an hour is typical in prison jobs.
So what makes people want to do hard work that is dangerous for so little money?
Yeah, so I think that for me personally, I aspired to do fire work because it felt like the most positive thing I could do when I was incarcerated. It felt like physically it would be this outlet that would be amazing to be able to do this type of work that I never imagined myself doing. It's like giving back. I don't know how else to put it. It's not necessarily serving the state, but it's a way to serve humanity again, in a sense, that kind of brings us back to center. So I know that there's that motivation on a personal level, and then there is definitely a motivation for folks that are able to earn good time credit. You know, participating in the fire camps, you are able to earn, let's say, if you came in with a crime and you were doing half of your time that you were actually sentenced to, if you went to the fire camps, you would be able to do about 33% of your time. So that's a huge motivation for folks, too, is it's a way to reduce the amount of time that you're serving in the institution.
So, like, this work gets characterized as volunteering.
Yeah.
But what you're describing is a choice for people who are incarcerated to either go fight fires or serve more time in prison.
Yes.
When it's a choice between prison time and work, that doesn't feel like a voluntary choice.
No, it's not. There is only one potential way to earn that much good time credit in prison, and that is with that job. I don't know of any other position you could possibly take in prison that would allow you to earn that much good time credit. You hear really often, you know, CIW was the first prison I was at, and that was tended to be like this hub for fire girls, right, that were going to be going off to fire camp. And a lot of the fire girls were, it wasn't a choice. I mean, yeah, it was a choice to get home to your family sooner, just like you said, but not necessarily a voluntary. Like, I would have chosen to go and fight fires or be on the fire line or do this work. It's very, very intense work. And so, I mean, I think I trained for a year on my own before I made it out there of running, and we had to be able to do a certain amount of push-ups and sit-ups and just get ourselves really physically fit to even make it in. And then, you know, once you're there, the work is grueling. I mean, it's very, very intense, and we're doing 24-hour shifts on the fire lines when we are there. The folks that are doing the wildland firefighting, I admire more than I can even tell you, because it's the worst of the work, in my opinion.
What's it like?
So cutting line and clearing brush is a typical duty of somebody that's doing wildland firefighting. And you're literally in just the hottest of conditions, in really heavy, hot gear with hand tools and dusty, dirty, sweaty, in the middle of nowhere, you know, and you're cutting line to protect the fire from hopping into a new area.
So cutting line means you're chopping down trees, clearing brush.
Yes, right. The days that I cut line were, you know, you leave with your hands covered in blisters, and it's just, it's really intense. It's intense work. Yeah. So for me, I enjoyed, you know, fighting vehicle fires, and, you know, we were trained to use the jaws of life and extricate people from cars, things like that. To me, that was amazing, powerful work, but I always admired these wildland firefighters that were doing this in the middle of nowhere with no human beings besides their crew and their hand tools. I mean, it's a lot.
Is it just that it's hard work, or is it dangerous too?
Oh, no, it's dangerous work, absolutely. Wildland fire, you're just breathing in tons of smoke, and typically you just have a bandana protecting you from that smoke. You know, on the structure fires, we would, you know, have our packs and our breathing masks and oxygen, things like that, but not in wildland fire. Wildland fire, you're covered with a bandana, and then, yeah, you're certainly at high risk of falling trees, fire jumping the line, and, you know, wildland firefighting is really intense, dangerous work for sure.
So you're out there in the woods for 24 hours at a stretch, yep, breathing smoke while doing really heavy breathing work.
Yes.
Chopping trees down and stuff.
Yep.
And then you go back to state prison.
Yes.
Do you see a doctor? Does anybody check your lungs?
No, never. It's so interesting because I think that, I mean, never, nothing, anything more than what we would see a doctor for when we are on the inside in a cell, right? We don't have regular physicals or anything like that, except for when we first come into prison. And no, there's nothing done that is extra for firefighters, nor is there much training at all or medical discussions about what to do to protect yourselves. Not to say that our fire captains weren't wonderful about teaching us what they know, but a lot of this stuff I learned about what we're exposed to on fire lines, I didn't learn until after I came home.
What did you learn?
I heard a number of different things about what cancer rate looks like for firefighters. I learned about why it wasn't a great idea to take off our masks when we were exhausted in a structure fire and we felt like we just couldn't deal with these masks anymore. So we'd take them off and breathe. And people would say, you know, it's a good idea to keep them on, but we just didn't. We didn't know anything more than it wasn't comfortable. And so we would take them off and take a deep breath of whatever soot we breathed in that structure fire. And so I kind of learned about some of the effects of that after leaving and wished I had known a little bit more at the time. So I think that folks are, we have this amazing training program, but the realities of the discussion of what it means to be a firefighter and the safety risks and what are the health exposures that we are, the situations we're putting ourselves in, we're not really aware of as we're doing them, for sure.
But on balance, you liked the work? You liked being a firefighter?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was amazing. For me, there was a huge amount of pride in being an all-female crew as well. One of the really powerful things about our crew is that we wore the same gear as every other firefighter that responded. And so we weren't identified as inmate firefighters. So when we came to someone's home or we pulled up at a fire, it wasn't like, here comes inmates. It was, here comes the firefighters, right? And the other crews in the area that knew who we were worked closely with us and had this great amount of respect for us because we worked really, really hard. So I had a lot of pride about being an all-female crew and doing things that people just really couldn't believe that, you know, five females on the truck could do. And we did it well. So I had a lot of pride in the job and a lot of wins, a lot of successes. I mean, there was, you know, there's times when you're doing, you know, CPR on somebody and you get the message that they survived. And that's a win, you know, when we save someone's home, it's a win. Yeah. It's a gift to be able to serve like that, regardless of where you are, incarcerated or not.
So you liked the work.
Yep.
You got about 2.5 years experience doing it.
Yes.
You got out of prison.
Yep.
Firefighting pays pretty well if you're not a prisoner.
Right.
How come you're not doing it now?
So one of the things that happened during my training was I was given reality checks by the fire captains and chiefs of what our potential really looked like when we came home. And so what we were told inside as we were being trained up is what we were eligible for, right, which would be CAL FIRE, so state and federal type of jobs, but that we would never be able to serve at municipal firehouses. And I didn't really know why. I just know that that's what I was told on the inside. Like, you know, chief would say, you guys are great, but you can't do this. So, you know, it turns out the reasons we can't do that are typically firehouses request EMT certifications, and as felons, we're banned from getting those certifications.
The emergency medical technician certification.
Yep.
Like you need to be able to provide basic medical care to someone who's in crisis.
Yes.
Why do they care whether you have a felony record when they're handing out that certification?
That's a great question. I hear so much, you know, when the talk about inmate firefighters, I hear so much resistance to having, I mean, we are basically considered folks that have character flaws, right? Once we're labeled as felons, our character is questioned for the rest of our lives. And so I think that with any employment that requires a license, character is being taken into consideration. And so we hear that a lot. But we also did that. I hear all the time, like, you wouldn't want an inmate or a felon coming into your home. But I was like, well, we did come into your home. We came into your home. We responded to correctional officers' homes that were on fire. We responded to vehicle accidents that correctional officers' children and grandchildren were in. And they were not checking our criminal histories while we responded and worked on their children. You know, we were human beings and they were grateful for our hard work and our dedication and our commitment to what we were doing. So I think that the question of why these barriers exist for felonies is a larger question of what it means to have, a criminal conviction on your record for life.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, the state spent money training you to be a firefighter.
Yes.
The state needs more firefighters.
Yes.
It seems crazy that you can't do the work the government's already spent the money to train you for.
Absolutely. Yep. Had I been able to come, you know, because I paroled to the Bay Area. So had I been able to work for a fire department in the Bay Area, I would have done it in a heartbeat. I would have been a fabulous firefighter. I would have, you know, I would have been great. I know it. But I came home knowing that the only thing that really existed for me was seasonal work, low pay, meant I'd been gone for 7 years already. So, you know, work that would require me to leave my children again. So it didn't seem reasonable.
And the seasonal work, you mean wildland firefighting?
Yes. Yeah.
Like smoke jumping into the Sierras to dig fire lines.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it seems like a waste of resources. And I, you know, I see like what's happening right now is that there's these small, we're making progress in small areas, right? So there's a lot of bills that are coming into play that are looking at what it means to be excluded from certain licenses because of our criminal convictions. Governor Brown has proposed these parolee training camps. I think it's something like 80 parolees a year could potentially be trained up at these state camps once they're released and then plugged into firefighting jobs, which is amazing. But it's a very small amount. I mean, 80 firefighters, it's a small amount. But the resistance is coming from the communities, right? And so I think that the one that was proposed is in Ventura County, and it all sounds great until the neighbors in Ventura County that would have potentially, it just comes back to this view again of what it means to be viewed as an inmate or a felon or somebody with a criminal history. They don't want us next door training. They don't want us responding once they know who we are. Mm. And so I think that's just this bigger general issue with what it looks like to really have second chances and redemptions when we're coming home, you know, what the community and the public sees when they see someone with a criminal history.
So you weren't able to work in a municipal firehouse when you got out?
No.
You weren't about to abandon your kids to go fight wildfires in the bush?
Right.
What did you wind up doing?
Well, I wound up, and when I very first came home, I started applying at regular, like, Starbucks and Amazon and wherever, anywhere it looked like there was potential hiring happening, and I was getting shut down at every turn. And so 6 months after coming home, I was introduced to someone at the Young Women's Freedom Center, and I was told you should come by. This might be a place, you know, and came to the Young Women's Freedom Center, and it's an amazing organization in San Francisco. It's run by formerly incarcerated women. I mean, I think 95% of the staff right there now are formerly incarcerated. And I found a place where basically all of this, my history, it wasn't a, you know, a check of a negative thing. It was a positive thing, and it was an asset because I was a credible messenger. I was one of the only, you know, people that could work with the young women coming home because I'd been through what they'd been through. And so that path changed my life in coming home. That was my first job. I'm still there today, 3.5 years later, and now working specifically on prison reentry. And, you know, the Young Women's Freedom Center is a leadership and advocacy organization that does what I really wish that we could just bring across the state, you know, for men, for women, but what it looks like to be somebody coming home that's system involved, that has been told that they're really not worth much, and to transform this life experience that we have into something that we can really use. And so we work on policy, advocacy. We have an amazing staff of young women that are just out there doing some really powerful things in the community now and have transformed their lives and are transforming others along the way as well.
Do you see any reforms in the near future that would get rid of some of those barriers you face to getting
Yes.
The EMT license you needed for the job?
Yeah, there are some, you know, some specific bills that we worked on this last year that were targeting occupational licensing. And we have a lot more work to do.
They didn't pass.
They didn't pass. And so there's, you know, particular bills that are targeting the EMT licensure on its own. There's some that are holding the firefighting and then occupational licensing as a whole. So a lot of different licensures that we're looking at. And yeah, so I have hope for the future. I mean, I feel like it's the conversation is happening, which is something that I can say is different than in the past. The horrific wildfires that are sweeping California continues to put this conversation on the table about inmate firefighters. And this has just never been talked about before. And so I feel like at least this wave of information is coming to the public. And I do hope that there's some change in the future that will really shift what it looks like to come home and be a productive member of society.
Well, Amika Mota, thank you so much for coming in to tell your story.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Amika Mota worked at Cal Fire Station 5 in Madera while she was incarcerated at Chowchilla. Now she is reentry director at the Young Women's Freedom Center based in San Francisco.
And we did put a call in after that interview to the California Emergency Medical Services Authority. That's the agency that oversees EMT certification, which Amika identified as the principal hurdle to her getting work as a municipal firefighter. When we hear back from them about what exactly the obstacles are and why they exist, we will let you know what we find.